form. I have three speakers, Roger Larson, I have Brenda Edelman, and I have Dwayne DeWitt in that order. I have four. And then Petey Brecker. It looks like I have five. Do I hear six?
Chairman Corbett?
Yes.
May I beg your indulgement? I came at 8:30 to speak, and I have to go to work. Could I speak first, sir?
I certainly will give you that indulgence, and then you had requested, we carefully reviewed, and you submitted written material, so you get 5 minutes as opposed to the usual three. So why don't you step forward, identify your name, and I'll just keep counting public commenters here.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, my name is Dwayne DeWitt, and I'm from Roseland. And I wanted to thank you today. I'm here with a seven-year itch, if you will. I've brought a report that I gave to the National Brownfields Conference in 2009 about Roseland. And the reason why I'm reusing it again is because the situation is still pretty much the same out there, and it's a difficult time, and I'm here to seek your help. I am a volunteer. I'd been working with the Community Builders Corporation and Roseland Action for over 21 years, and back in the mid-90s, we formed a thing called Citizens Cleanup Coalition, in which the Water Board was involved with, and they helped us to seek water quality issue, address those things. So first I'm going to show the area location and then discuss some of the history and go on to request your help. So Roseland is here to the Santa Rosa area. It's to the southwest of Santa Rosa. And right there you see it's highlighted to the southwest on that map. It's a 1.2 square mile area. This is Roseland Creek running down the center of this area here, that riparian corridor. And this has recently been saved with funding from the Sonoma County Agricultural Preservation Area. The creek runs out all this way and will finally go to Laguna de Santa Rosa. This would be an excellent area where you could do riparian corridor stormwater retention and positive things. But first, what I wanted to talk with you about is how this area has been plagued by the difficulty of governmental interaction, if you will. And as a citizen, I've found it very harrowing to try to deal with the situation. The census data is from 10 years ago, and it showed then the Hispanic population was 36%. Now it's switched places, and it's 54% for Hispanics, and the Caucasian is 36%. Here's what is harrowing for us. The silos of government. You see to the left the city. Then you've got the county, and you've got the state, and you've got the federal way over there. But what we're dealing with is right here, a city redevelopment project area. And those are dead now, technically, but this is put together because we were trying to figure out what to do next. And up here, this one here was formed in 1984, and it was the county's Roseland redevelopment project area. That red line there effectively redlined the neighborhood, if you will, because it also called out the McMinn Avenue State Superfund site. And that has permanently plagued us, if you will, for these 30 years. The redevelopment area lasted 28 years until 2012. And what it did was build a roadway along Sebastopol Road. And we don't know what else it really did. So there it is, Roseland Creek running through there. The positives of our community effort to work to save that has helped, and there's where that natural area, the Roseland neighborhood is, 11 acres to the north, 6 acres to the south of the creek. The creek could be an excellent way to do positive things on clean water. There's currently approximately 15,000 people in Roseland, and the last information we got was in 2000. That's important to keep in mind about the brownfields and any other things. So now it's been 15 full years. We had this red and yellow zone set up out there where the underground water had been contaminated by brownfields that were petroleum, and there was also dry cleaners. And so you had this situation where they set up a red zone here, saying that in that area there was contamination. The threat was so bad they had to go on to city water. We didn't know if it continued southward because the underground water flow is to the southwest, and here's the creek, and one would think that naturally that water would go down towards the creek. So, long story short, this is the last information I had about the McMinn Avenue State Superfund site. You can see that this form, at the time, the State Department of Toxic Substance Control was doing things with you, and they told me you folks had become the lead agency. So right now, these groups have been working since 2009 to try to get better interaction out there, and I'm here today to ask you folks for your help to help us go forward, especially to help with safe, clean drinking water to the south of Sebastopol Road. It's a concern for the residents who still have wells. They don't know what's going on. And also the concern of the reuse of the brownfields up along Sebastopol Road, which I showed you earlier. This was an idea for a community proposal, public-private partnership. You have the County Board of Supervisors, Community Development Commission, and having residents as an equal part of this. As you noticed in those silos earlier, there was no silos for the residents. We're just on the outside kind of looking in. So what I wanted to leave you with was this idea that the Water Board could help us to coordinate a successful revitalization of Roseland. We have these goals: obtain and increase federal funding to Roseland, improve the quality of life in Roseland, revitalize that corridor, parks, green open spaces. They can help with the water quality.
And then I need you to finish up.
Right, sir. So there we are. This is what we put together in 2010. This is what we need to do now. What I'm asking you folks to do is to help us. We need to have you give us support as we try to get a brownfields-type grant for area-wide planning. These agencies could be helpful. But right now, we're stuck. We need you. This is all we got is me and some other folks, and we try our best. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any board comments or questions? And then I'll call on whether staff wants a response.
I guess just a comment. Obviously, and all I know about the Roseland situation is what Mr. DeWitt has shared with me over the last year. Obviously, there's years of history here, and I don't know that history, but maybe a question for Matt, but it seems obvious from that presentation that we do have a role in this, and it seems that, if nothing else, to leverage support to move this forward. I guess I ask the question: why has this dragged on so long? If in fact it is a water quality issue, I guess I'm just surprised that he's here, seemingly begging for help, and it seems like it's something that falls within the purview of several jurisdictions.
So there are many different separate sites within the Roseland neighborhood, all of which we have different caseworkers actively working on. Some of the sites have reached closure. Others are still very much active sites. Mr. Craig Hunt of our staff oversees the site cleanup unit, and we met with Mr. DeWitt and Craig and Rob Dickerson prior to this meeting, and we suggested that he come back and speak again in public forum. The most that I can say is that we're taking a look at all of the sites. There's a process for each individual site for evaluating the conditions and determining the appropriate actions.
So I believe you. Is there a way to get the community involved so that they understand that these different steps are taking place and that things are progressing? In other words, how do we, and maybe it's already happened, again, I realize there's a lot of history, but how do we improve the transparency of of the work that's going on, so people at least know that things are happening.
Sure. So there's no question that there was more active involvement by this agency with engaging in the public within that area 10 years ago. And we could reinitiate that and hold a public meeting, produce some informational fact sheets that can be distributed. And we're happy to do those things.
Well, I would ask that you consider. I mean, there's nothing that frustrates people more than feeling like they're left out of the silo.
Sure.
And simply sharing what's happened, and then also, given Steve's comments, if this agency can provide leverage for some of those Prop 1 funds, if it's appropriate, to support this effort, and whether the money goes to the county or the city or you know, whatever the pass-through organization is, it seems that we have an opportunity to play a supportive role, if nothing else.
Yeah.
But I suggest that it's always best to keep people in the loop, and I would suggest that maybe it's time to share what's been done and what opportunities, you know, some of these new legislative acts provide these folks.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I can actually answer that, Greg. In my day job, I actually have worked on many sites down here, and McMinn's interesting. You're right, there needs to be an updating of information. Bill Erdi of this agency did a lot of the initial work to list this site and identify the magnitude of the problem, and it was a sizable problem. Many of the sites on that list actually are closed. That world's changed, though, I'll tell you, from the standpoint that for one thing, there's some of these sites that went through a full closure under the regulations as they stood 5 years ago. Up to 5 years ago, or actually 2 years ago, because now what's occurred is that there's the low-threat closure for underground tank sites. And this is a combination of halogenated volatile organic compounds and leaking tank sites that all mix together to be commingled. We do need more information here. What's interesting is that this McMinn area is actually representative of other areas in our region. Santa Rosa is not unique. Many of our built environments have urban areas that have industrial and commercial use that have remnants and artifacts and impacts as they exist. I think the interesting part of McMinn is that the information set's highly dated. At the same time, I believe what Mr. DeWitt's asking for is some help in attaining brownfield money, which is federal money to do assessment. In my experience, brownfield money needs to be applied by a municipality or a NGO as an applicant. It has census requirements and it has all the application requirements. I believe our role has been actually very good, right? That we have had staff and a variety of staff that has worked on these sites over time. I would also tell you that once you introduce HVOCs and petroleum hydrocarbons into a groundwater system, it's tremendously hard to remediate, and it takes a heck of a long time. And so that work is ongoing, and I would fully disclose that we actually have a remediation system on one of these sites now. Thank you for the cleanup fund, by the way.
And again, I think that's all great.
Yep.
I think it's time to share all of that good information with folks so that they feel that something is being done. And you know, you just taught me something, how to go forward with brownfield, to pursue brownfield money. Again, I think the expertise and the talent between this board and the agency, if nothing else, could provide some leadership and help folks continue down this path in a very convoluted and complicated system.
Well, and I agree. Two things I would ask for is an update to the information in a timely manner from staff so that we can disseminate that as a whole, either individually, because I believe these sites actually on GeoTracker and some of the public dissemination sites have a fairly good description on the path to closure, the status of site. So I think that can be done in a timely manner. The other part of it is I believe that as applicants come forward, I believe this agency would be more than happy to support brownfield funding applications and cleanup, as it were, and sensible public support for an effort out here to make a community better, whether that be Roseland or other communities that need that kind of help in our region. And maybe in the future, Matt, come back to us and tell us, you know, this came up before. Mr. DeWitt's been with us a couple times now. And by the way, thank you, Duane, for bringing Roseland back up. It's timely. We need to do it. And we could use this also as an example on some of the other communities that are within our region that need the same sort of attention and help as well.
Thank you, sir. A public meeting at Roseland.
Well, how about we do this, Dwayne? Matt, if you could get back to us and get us some information, maybe think about that with staff and what's the best way to approach it. I would be glad to help as you need. And I agree that we need to get some public dissemination. And actually, this is a county island system that's connected to a city system with a lot of really interesting things in motion right now. And I think the information that we collectively put out there could inform the decision-making process of what's needed in this community. You're absolutely right, by the way, too, Dwayne, to point out that this area discharges the Laguna system. I live in the Laguna, and when that water comes through in high flood events in the Laguna system, this is basically a lot of urban water coming into the system. There are opportunities all the way around here. And from that standpoint, I think that we have some good chances here to do some good things.
Thank you. I really appreciate your indulgence today.
Thanks for
5 minutes is wonderful.
Thanks for coming, Dwayne.
Well, we're going to quit while we're ahead that you think we're intelligent. The next public speaker is Roger Larson.
Thanks for your time. My name is Roger Larson. I live out in Happy Acres. Sonoma County Waste Management Agency has admitted to dumping over 600,000 gallons of leachate out of their waste pond to the pond on Hamill Road, polluting that pond, and then out to Stemple Creek. I have video of this event, but you know what? It looks exactly like it did a year ago. A year ago, I was here asking you to deal with the polluters who were violating your zero discharge order. A year later, they're still violating your zero discharge order. In the interim, you have given Sonoma County Waste Management Agency permission to pollute by encouraging them to continue to compost the Century Landfill, and pollute they have. Hundreds of diesel truck trips causing tons of air pollution, tons of greenhouse gas emissions. They've pulled millions of gallons of water out of the local aquifers and diverted them to other watersheds. They've probably destroyed critical salamander habitat by combining two seasonal ponds into one constantly dry lined pond. We'll never know for sure, as they were too in haste to check with authorities and give themselves an exemption so they could build a pond that's too small for any use. Sonoma County Waste Management Agency promised you more ponds and more trucking. They promised to make their footprint smaller by consolidating their piles. Both of those promises have been broken. 30 million gallons was too expensive of a pond to build, so now it's just 3 million gallons. Even a 3 million gallon pond will be overrunning in a rainy year. That's just more pollution. Consolidating piles was too expensive. That promise was broken 20 minutes after you walked out of the meeting approving of their great plan. Now, in their minutes, they walk around congratulating themselves because in the midst of a drought, they've only managed to pollute Stemple Creek twice. They have admitted their estimate of 600,000 gallons was incorrect and underreported the pollution levels. I would encourage this body to stop assisting one of the largest water polluters in Sonoma County and fine them for their actions. Show them that there is a cost to polluting the environment. Help them see the folly of composting on top of that hill. Be the lion for the people you are supposed to be, not the kitten to the politicians. Save the tax and ratepayers from this lunacy. The last minutes of the Sonoma County Waste Management Agency's meeting says how pleased you are all with their actions. Is that what you want them telling themselves and the public? Be the lion and find Swarma, or be a kitten and continue to help that agency pollute. Thank you.
Any board member comments or questions? Okay.
No, this is a request for you to find them.
Does staff want to make a brief response?
The item in front of you today is a sort of ministerial amendment adding a discharger name to a permit that's, and it's carving out the issue of the compost anyway, so it's not related.
So basically the determination is it's covered within the scope of the agenda.
These comments here in public forum were not within the scope of the item in front of the board.
I have
today.
Comments on that item as well. So,
I'm very unclear what the determination is of staff?
I think this was appropriate as a public forum.
Okay, good. Then I go back to my question. Does the executive director want to make a brief comment?
Chairman Corbett, David Leland, Assistant Executive Officer. As part of the reissuance of the permit to the central landfill in March of 2013, 2 years ago now, we included a requirement to submit a plan for achieving the zero discharge of other than stormwater from the facility. Received a plan and a number of revisions of that plan in the back and forth that typically happens in these kind of situations. And the proposal that we're working with now from them includes both a short-term and a long-term aspects to reduce and ultimately eliminate the discharge of, in this particular case, we're talking about compost contact water. The Waste Management Agency has been implementing the short-term plan, which has a variety of elements in it, which included, as Mr. Larson has referred to, the expansion and combination of what had been two stormwater ponds, the reduction of their footprint, the addition of sediment barriers to retain organic matter, and they have been successfully implementing that and have actually, I think, exceeded the expectations that we had for the short term, and continue to work on the efforts to meet the long term plan, which will ultimately be, as we see it at this point, associated with the decision to build a new compost facility in a location other than where it is. Now, what that decision is going to be is uncertain at this point, but that will, we intend that will ultimately resolve the issue of discharge of compost water. So that's roughly where we stand at this
play
point.
Play this back to you. We recognize there's a public problem. We have regulated it. It's down to a plan. So let me ask you, what's the date when this man's troubles will be relieved in the plan?
That we can't say at this point because, it hinges on the actions related to selection of a future compost facility. So there is uncertainty about that at this point.
I would certainly consider trying to put a deadline on that decision-making process, because otherwise site location can be very challenging.
There was a decision when that would be made. It was last November. It didn't happen. They were supposed to have a decision by now, but it didn't happen. And also, if you call dumping 200,000 or 600,000 gallons of water into that creek again a success and hauling away millions of gallons of water out of that aquifer, this is a drought. You guys are talking about flows and you're talking about water storage, and yet you're taking millions of gallons of water out of Stemple Creek in its watershed and taking it somewhere else, and then even yet dumping 600,000 gallons of waste into a creek, and you're calling that a success.
And then I'm going to have to cut you off because we're not on the agenda, not a back and forth, although we did hear your comments.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, and Board Member Norn.
Mr. Leland, can I ask you, we actually, in requiring a zero discharge on this facility.
Thank you, Brenda, for
there was a letter that memorialized the requirement for zero discharge, the approval of the plan, and it sets forth also an evaluation and a potential enforcement on our end, penalty on our end, if that were the case, and a decision of this board to do so, I believe.
We've retained all of our options for
that's correct. And at the same time, this plan, as I see it, is a seasonal plan. It was to get through this season, as the planning that is outside of this agency was to make some decisions about the location and the resiting of this landfill, of which we have no control. At the same time, I would ask, has there been reporting from the Sonoma County Waste Management Authority on their activities out there? I believe that they were supposed to report monthly to this agency.
They do report monthly, and it is included in also, that report is included in their report to their to their board. I would not characterize, if I used the word success, that would probably have been overstating it. I don't think I did, but certainly substantial progress. In previous years, all of the compost contact water was discharged to Stump Creek with minimal treatment of any kind. And according to the numbers that we have from the Waste Management Agency, something like 90% of that compost contact water has been diverted this year. So that's substantial progress.
Can I ask that you make sure that you share with us from staff then that you give us, I assume that those are public documents that have been forwarded to us from the Waste Management Authority so that we can be clear about the efforts that have been done, the amount of discharge that occurred, and the efforts that have been put forth to abate the discharge?
Sure.
And that we would retain our right in the future to come back and revisit this issue and our authority in the future if that's a decision that we make.
Okay.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Any other board comment? Okay, Brenda Edelman.
Brenda Edelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. Thank you very much. At the last meeting, you expressed interest and concern about endocrine disruption, and I really appreciate that. I guess this is sort of, I still have concerns about how that's going to play out. I see things happening that, for instance, it was just mentioned by Mr. St. John that you're going to be looking at the streamlined use of recycled water, development policies to use stormwater as a resource, groundwater recharge, and use of wastewater to augment stream flows. All of those things have implications in regard to endocrine disruption, and especially the augmenting stream flows in the summertime with wastewater. That, to me, is institutionalizing possibly runoff from irrigation. And what I've been discovering through several angles is that the state in general, and also in our area, that whenever wastewater is being promoted to reuse for irrigation, the risk of doing so are never mentioned. It's always the good aspects of using the wastewater. There's an article that I circulated with you put out by pesticide group, and it's a scientific article, and it basically says that there's endocrine disruptors getting into our food supply through wastewater irrigation. The state had a workshop in their February 17th meeting. There was a report on a workshop they had in Southern California. For some reason, most of the state, south San Francisco and south, was involved. I don't know why the North Coast Board was not involved or present, but there were like 57 people there, many of them from Sacramento Water Department. State Water Board. And basically the focus was on presenting wastewater for irrigation and for direct reuse and indirect reuse as an image problem as opposed to having real issues. There was one group that did express some concerns about the potential residues of endocrine disruption, but most of the time, most of the focus has been on presenting a pretty face to these practices without serious consideration. I just want to read one brief statement put out by the Water Agency for Sonoma, City of Sonoma Irrigation Project, and it says, "Modern wastewater treatment replicates the natural recycling process to restore large quantities of water quickly and effectively. Recycled water produced by the sanitation district is treated to tertiary recycled water standards, which is the highest level of treatment defined by the state of California, Title 22. Well, I know also that on North Marin's website, they say the same thing. And the actually, the higher forms of treatment, reverse osmosis and nanofiltration and others, Dr. James Crook has stated that even with those highest forms, there are still some endocrine disruptors remaining in the wastewater. And I just
want... I'm going to need you to finish up.
Okay, I'll just say one of my biggest concerns is because I've noticed so much over-irrigation, I'm concerned about the pesticides and soil amendments that people put on their lawns that may then run off when this is applied. And I'd like to encourage you to have some kind of regulations around use of wastewater in areas where pesticides are being used. They are definitely endocrine disruptors. And I thank you very much. I just hope that this issue will be integrated to your work wherever you have any kind of irrigation, flow augmentation, or groundwater additions. This is a critical issue.
Yeah, and I really do need you to sum up.
I gave you information. I appreciate it if you look at it. There's more things I'd like to say than I'm unable to say right now because of the time limit. Thank you.
Thank you, and you are a constant reminder, and I did even scan in your information. I'll let you know. So, next person is Petey Brucker.
Hi, my name is Petey Brucker. I'm from the Salmon River. I'm representing the Salmon River Restoration Council. I want to thank you for being here and your staff for being here. And you know, also, by the way, I want to thank you for the great flow workshop that was yesterday and the work that you are doing on this. And I look forward to reading the narrative. My hat's off to you. But you know, I come today because I think that the Salmon River, we've had the last year, we had the biggest fires, 200,000 acres burned. You know, I'm concerned that the year before, when I saw the salmon salvage on the North Fork, that it really wasn't a restoration project. So the waiver that the Forest Service is requesting, or that you're going to give, is not based on restoration, because in the Klamath National Forest, the West Side Recovery DEIS, isn't going to prepare us for the next fires. I've been through 10 campaign fires myself. My house has burned twice in forest fires. So, you know, and I'm the co-author of the restoration plan for the Salmon River. You know, this is a priority that's emergency, emerging from us, that we should focus our primary access on emergency access routes and on private residences, around private residences. It should be the primary thing that's happening. We've told the Forest Service that, and we haven't gotten that response, so that's why I'm here. You know, I'm concerned with the waiver that you're investigating, because you know, the Forest Service should do more restoration. They can do more restoration in our watershed. And you may find that you need stronger language in this waiver than it has. And the Salmon River Restoration Council is available to you at any time to ask any questions. Please do that. I recommend that you look at the Crook Tribe's alternative to the West Side Recovery Draft Environmental Statement for more insight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Petey, I believe that that Forest Service waiver comes up for renewal later this year sometime.
Yes.
Can I ask that you come back and be involved in that?
I will.
Fantastic.
Henry Mikas?
Good morning. Thank you for affording me the opportunity to speak. I'm Henry Mikas. I'm the executive director of the Sonoma County Waste Management Agency. I was here a little less than a year ago with Mr. Stu Clark to talk to you about our zero discharge plan for our compost facility at the landfill. And so I wanted to thank you and the Water Board and staff for affording us the opportunity to be successful moving ahead to solve our problem with the discharge from the site and at the same time preserve an activity that is key to waste diversion efforts for the region and also much appreciated, much utilized by both the agriculture community and our citizens. We presented the plan, and we have followed all the key elements in the plan for the past year, particularly this rainy season. The plan never contemplated that zero discharge would be eliminated immediately. It had some steps to get to there. In the last year, we were asked particularly to reduce the footprint of the compost so as to reduce the amount of water that was generated by the site. And we were asked to up our game as far as being able to divert the water and do something with it other than to let it discharge. And those two things have been accomplished. We went from a 25-acre site to roughly a 19.3-acre site, so it's an 18% reduction in footprint with a commensurate 18% reduction in the amount of water that's generated. And we took two small ponds that had less than 1 million gallons capacity and constructed a bigger impoundment structure that now holds 2 million gallons of water when it rains. We've also upped our game with hauling the water and have been able to establish multiple places to take the water. So I wish to acknowledge at this time that our success has been because we've had very willing and cooperative partners. The Laguna Waste Treatment Plant that's operated by Santa Rosa is one of them. Petaluma's Ellis Creek Water Plant has helped us, as has East Bay Mud in Oakland. Having a combination of plants has allowed us to be very aggressive with the water that we've trucked and hauled away. The numbers for this rainy season are that we've generated about just under 10 million gallons of water from rain. We've been able to haul away somewhere around 7 million gallons, and we had that one set of discharge events for one intense storm of 600,000. So that matches the numbers and percentages that Mr. Leland reported to you. As far as the way ahead, we are proceeding with the site selection process. One of the things that occurred in the fall was we did a preliminary design of a new site, and part of that work included enhancements to recognize some of the neighbors' concerns. Stormwater was one. We've got a preliminary design that looks to roof the site. The other is odor concerns, and we're going to enclose the parts of the operation that would cause odors. That required some additional work in the CEQA process. We are still on tap to make a site decision here in this year. The date that we put in our zero discharge plan for completion of a new site was the end of next year, so at the end of fall of 2016. Mr. Leland is correct. That's still up in the air because there are factors beyond our control that might or might not affect that process, CEQA being one of them. But we're still proceeding along. Our board is actively engaged in making that happen. Looking ahead, we're not standing pat. It was not included in our plan, but something we are working on currently for this year is to further improve our ability to impound water and haul it away. And we are doing design work and the permitting work to build another 3 million gallon pond to catch more water. And the theory here is that that, with our current pond, would allow us to manage at least a 100-year 24-hour storm, which I think would get us somewhere in the neighborhood around 98% of what we'd expect in the course of a typical year rain-wise. So again, I want to conclude by saying I thank you for the opportunity for us to keep moving ahead with our project. I do believe we've been successful with achieving the goals that we set forth in our zero discharge plan. And if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Any board member questions or comments? Okay, staff? Okay, thank you for your comments.
Could I take 20 seconds for one other comment?
Sure.
I've heard you talk about water quality. One of the things that I think worth mentioning is that our board has had some discussion and asked us to start doing some planning with safe medicines and how improper disposal of safe medicines impacts water quality. And so I just want to let you know that we're working on that as a way to reduce that impact. And I've had some conversation just in the briefest way with your staff, but I think that is a project where collaboration with people like yourselves and the Russian River Watershed Group and others would really be huge to make that a successful project. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that work on pharmaceuticals. Just one question. What date do you think that you're going to be able to achieve for the zero discharge? Are we talking 1 year, 5 years, 2 years?
The target date, absent some unforeseen circumstances, November of 2016.
Okay.
We're hopeful that we can finish the CEQA process and select the site this summer and then spend the winter doing the design permit work and procurement so that summer of 2016 we can build a new site.
So you think you're making good progress and are on
yes,
schedule?
Sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Right. Felice Pace.
Good morning, Felice Pace, representing the North Coast Streamflow Coalition. I note that yesterday, you know, you heard lots of support for flow objectives in basin plans and criteria and things like that. I just want to point out that that is not a substitute, in no way is a substitute for flow listings. And twice before this board, when petitioned to do impaired listings, has acted in a similar way and refused to do it. Twice you've been in court and twice you've lost. And I don't understand why we have to go through that again. It's a tremendous waste of energy and it's totally unnecessary. On the Shasta and Scott, we've got the solidest information. We've got groundwater studies. We've got flow studies. We've got the climate study that I mentioned to you yesterday, which is peer-reviewed science. We've got a lot of information. So there's no reason not to list. It sounds to me like, and based on past experience, we will not get cooperation between the agencies. I think we're gonna need legislation to mandate it. And we should, I'd encourage you to think about that, and Steve to think about that, all of us to think about that together, because collaboration just doesn't happen out of our silos unless it's mandated. And I just wanted to mention briefly that vegetation management for water yield, I'm familiar with the studies, and it's a very, and other studies besides the one that you mentioned. And that model, by the way, is very simple. I've been in meetings with those people, I've dialogued with them, and they understand their model is simple. But if you look at some of the literature reviews, and I'll be happy to send them to all of you, you'll see that it's a very complex subject. And to get significant water yields from vegetation management, you need to radically manage vegetation. In our landscapes, that leads to a lot of sediment. So it's, you know, I've looked at that. We looked at that back during the Sierra studies, you know, the big Sierra management plans. It was looked at intensely. It's being looked at again. And it's very complex science, so I encourage you to investigate that further and not accept the simple, you know, the simple idea that oh well, trees drink water, so if we cut down trees, we'll get more water. It's a little more complex than that. A lot more complex. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all the speaker cards I have. Does anyone else? Okay, I'm going to take. I'm sorry, please step forward and announce your name. And yeah, I'm trying to, I don't see it in my stack, but.
I gave it up over there. It's I had a triennial review, which I plan to make a comment afterwards. But I want to extend my comments from yesterday on the stream flows. And I'm Larry Hansen.
There it is. Thank you.
Yesterday it seems that there needs to be a kind of a conservation component, a strengthening of a conservation component in yesterday's presentation. And I would like to just add the that forest lands are perfect dams holding water like sponges, but even better because they conserve the water that's in the understory. In this regard, it is clear that intact forests and trees play a key role in the conservation of water and should be set as a high priority. The regional board in this regard should collaborate with CAL FIRE and county land use entities on this position. When forest areas and trees are removed, this does impact the water flow in those areas, especially as it it affects the Mediterranean climate, the water holding ability throughout the summer, and of course climate change. And I would like that to be everybody to consider this to be called climate crisis rather than climate change. This exacerbates this whole scenario. So please give a priority for the better protection of forests and trees, which play a key role in conserving stream flow. And just one other comment, I would like to see a more sense of urgency in the staff's overview of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any board member comments or questions? Okay, that concludes the public forum. I'll have a... every time I say 5 minutes, it never works. So I'll say 10 minutes, but I would hope that it's an honest 10 when we're back in session. I'm going to call us back.